Tiffany Lankus, welcome back to Press Pass.
Thanks for having me.
Well, the Buffalo Teachers Union rejected the latest contract offer, and it really appears that they're going to go to court now over the receivership issue.
You know, we've been expecting this, I think, for a while now. The issue with the receivership law that NYSET and BTF is arguing is that it allows Commissioner Mary Ellen Elia to come in and allow the superintendent to make changes at those schools that circumvent the teacher's contract. Obviously, that does appear to conflict with the state's Taylor Law, which has certain union protections in it and sets the standards for how you make changes to a contract, and also ensures that the current contract terms stay in place until you can negotiate a new contract. So this will be interesting to see how this works its way through the legal system, and a lot of this will ultimately fall on how a judge rules in that case. Because obviously, Kreiner Cash is moving full speed ahead at those schools. He's already made some changes for this year. We're almost at the end of the year, so planning is already underway for the next year. I think the worry is that you'll end up making changes that, if this law does not stand up, are going to be very difficult to reverse.
In Superintendent Cash, I asked him about the filing in anticipation of it, and he said he really wasn't worried about it, and he said he was just going to continue to move forward with those receivership plans.
That has been his attitude. And the only thing that, you know, would stop him at this point before the case is finalized is if the judge does sign off on an injunction. And then I would imagine that everything just comes to a standstill until they can have this case resolved. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people who have been following this issue, mixed feelings about how this is going to go. Even people who are very supportive of Kreiner Cash and the commissioner and their reform agenda will say this is not going to hold up in court. Carl Palladino has said that. So people in the reform circles have said that very early on. So, but again, you know, this will be up for a judge to decide.
The other issue that has come up, of course, and board member Barbara Seals-Nevergold has been pushing on this topic, is the fact that if the receivership was based on the failing schools that came out of Common Core testing and the Common Core has been deemed flawed, why are those schools now considered receivership?
And this argument is likely going to play into this lawsuit as well. And it's, you know, it's, again, it's a good point. I asked the commissioner about that thing a couple months ago, and her argument was that these are schools that even prior to the Common Core tests have been on these state lists. They have struggled for years. There's other reasons that they've landed up on this list, but you know, it's still a very good argument. The most recent data we have based on the test scores is on those Common Core tests. And if you look at the factors that did drive whether a school ended up in receivership, they are very heavily based on those tests. So it's a real argument that one could make.
And in the meantime, we are hoping that the schools are able to move forward to make improvements for the students.
Right. And I think, you know, the other thing that I think Dr. Cash has said, and, you know, Will Crestas and I had a conversation about this, is some of the things that they're talking about doing, you know, are best practices anyway. And they may not, you know, receivership aside, the board wants to lower class sizes. I don't think anyone has said, you know, that's a bad thing to do. You know, even offering a more robust after-school program, I don't think that's going to really create any detrimental harm should this law get overturned. The trickiest piece is probably the staffing, and the receivership law does allow for the superintendent to come in and make changes to staffing at the schools. And that's where, and we've seen historically when state laws have allowed for those kinds of transfers, they haven't held up in court, or they've been settled outside of court when the unions challenged it and resulted in, you know, usually hefty payments to the teachers involved.
With that, too, was the call for the longer school day, the longer school year, as you said, you know, maybe perhaps make a stronger after-school program. But again, it kind of goes back to this is what they're also trying to ask in the contract, the new contract for the teachers.
Well, and there's some cost, you know, factors here. Mm-hmm. I think we've talked about it before. You know, and the teachers have figured this out. They're not paying attention to this. If under the receivership law, they can extend the school day, but they have to pay teachers at the rate they're getting now. What the board wants to do is include this in the general contract so that they can pay them at a lower rate. You know, the union picked up on that right away. Teachers picked up on that. You know, and that's just the receivership probably has complicated these contract negotiations even more. You know, obviously there's an issue of what can you afford And I think that's part of the reason the district is approaching the extended day in the way that it is. But at the same time, you know, that's still a hard sell to teachers that we want you to agree to this contract when you know you'll be getting paid less for that longer time than if you force us to do it under the receivership law, if it holds up in court.
And making a contribution now to their health care insurance costs.
Right. I mean, you know, Larry Quinn has been talking about a lot that there is a financial gain for teachers in this. You know, the health care cost, I think, is maybe on average $800 or $900 for a teacher, and they have put, some additional money on the table, the raise, the extra money for the longer time. This has really proved to be a real dilemma. You and I have been covering this for years, and it just seems like, you know, they're going to go around and around. There's a lot of talk that Phil is not even going to really attempt to negotiate a contract until the election, which is just a couple months away. And there's a very real possibility that the board majority may change again in that election. We have 6 of the 9 seats are up. And if people thought the last election was going to be a real referendum on the future of the district, I think this time that's even more so the case. So there's a lot of different moving pieces between the lawsuit, changes happening at the state level, the possibility of new leadership here. It's interesting because this contract thing, the more you hear about it, it's difficult to see how they're ever really going to resolve this.
Wanted to go back to the issue of board elections. When do you think we'll get the first rumblings of who's going to launch a campaign out there? Because before you know it, it will be
voting time. Yeah, sneak up on us. You know, we're already starting to hear some. February will usually be when they start having to circulate petitions, so you'll probably see more definitive. The buzz is, as far as the incumbents go, that Jim Sampson will run. Jay McCarthy is a little bit of a wild card. His seat's up. He's obviously launching a new business endeavor, so whether he'll have the time to do it, he hasn't really committed publicly. It's funny because among the incumbents, I don't think they've really officially committed yet, but I think most people believe that Sharon Cotman will run, Teresa Harris-Tigg will run. The buzz is Ruth Kapsiak will not. The only person who's kind of a regular who's really come out and said that he'll run again is Duane Kelly, obviously regular at school board meetings. There's been some buzz that members of grassroots might be recruiting people to run for some seats, which that adds kind of an interesting new dynamic to we typically have seen this board be split for the past couple of years on two even sides. And so another political entity coming in and maybe picking up some seats is an interesting prospect. But I do think, in the next couple of weeks, as people have to start circulating petitions, I think those who have been interested have been quietly and not so quietly feeling out what their support base might be. Because I do think this will be another election that we see a lot of money put into. When you look at last year, I mean, you saw record spending on Larry Quinn's campaign, a lot of high-profile donors putting money into that. NYSET launching its Believe Buffalo campaign the week before the election, which was largely seen as a campaigning strategy. So a lot of money went into those races last time, and I think there'll probably be a lot of money spent on them again.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the parents in all of this, too. One of the tweets that you had put out during a school board meeting on board member Quinn, you said his concern is that NYSET and the BTF are trying to take over the parent voice, and they already have the teachers.
Well, and this has been an ongoing issue with the parent group. You know, we have the new BPTO group, which was started with some funding from NYSET and the National Education Association. What their concern is their feeling is that the District Parent Coordinating Council, which is the, quote, official sanctioned parent group in the district, is not representing all parents' voices. The flip side is I think there's a concern that a lot of their members are teachers, as well as parents. And I think that, as some of the board members' allegation that it's more of a cover, it's not really a parent group, it's a teacher group. We've been seeing that kind of escalate in recent weeks, and that's another issue that I don't foresee being easily resolved or going away anytime soon. So kind of at all levels in the system, in the boardroom, even among these parent groups, there's a lot of tension right now and a lot of friction. And I think sometimes the most important issues and what's really affecting some of the kids in the classroom are getting lost in this.
Tiffany Lankus, Buffalo News education reporter, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.